This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's catch you up with some headlines. Well, the Mariners got an amazing victory last night. They just blew it in one inning, gave up six runs, had errors all over the place, dropped down 6-3. James Paxton had to leave the game. Next thing you know, they're clawing their way back, and they end up getting two runs in the eighth to get the victory 7-6 over the Boston Red Sox to even the series. And so the series will continue tonight. And right now, the Mariners are a half game behind Houston because they just continue to just win like crazy. They won again last night. They're on a nine-game winning streak and have the easiest schedule in baseball to the All-Star break. And out of Los Angeles, the Angels put four players on the disabled list. That gives them 15 currently on the disabled list. They only have like 12 players they opened the season with that's not injured. That's just amazing. And, of course, some of the injuries very significant. I mean, you know, Shohei Ohtani now is probably going to miss. He's going to get an evaluation, but he could miss a year and maybe 2 years. Now, Garrett Richards, he goes on the disabled list with a strained left hamstring, so he's going to be out. Their infielder, Zach Cozart, also went on a DL with a partially dislocated left shoulder. So, yeah, but the Angels somehow were able to win 8-4 yesterday over the A's. As far as what's going on as far as the College World Series, the Huskies open up against Mississippi State today at 5 o'clock. That game's going to be on ESPN. Storm get a victory 11 points over the over Connecticut, 103-92, and those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Dave Grosme on vacation, and so joining us right now with the golf show back today, it's Jim Moore. Jim, how are you?
Good morning, Professor. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we get to go to the go-to guy and, of course, go to it at a time. I don't know, did you go to the Mariner game last night? I think we were well represented at 7:10. I know that Mara went, Mara Dooley, and a few of the other people on the staff. Did you go?
Well, John, I was there.
That's right, you were.
We did our show from Edgar's Cantina yesterday. We talked to Nelson Cruz and Shanna Dreher was out there. And I left before the game started because I was trying to get a head start. I'm currently over at a rest stop between Vantage and Ellensburg on my way to my kids. They're playing over in Hanford today. I left, but I watched most of the game last night, and it sure was fun. It was one of the strangest games of the year, John.
Yeah, it had to be. I mean, to give up, have all those errors, and then give up six runs, and you're thinking, I mean, any team in the last 15 years, Mariner team, probably would not come back from a game like that and win, and yet they did.
No, it was just so strange because they led 3-0. You figured they've got a great advantage, I thought, with Paxton going against Porcello. I know that Porcello is a good pitcher, but the way Paxton's been going this year, his last five starts, having the no-hitter, the 16-strikeout game, his career record against the Red Sox, a 0.39 ERA or something like that. He's cruising along ahead 3-0, and then you get into that inning, and I mentioned my kids, it was like watching one of their games and not the Mariners. The ball was just going all over the place. Segura making a throwing error. Haniger, that could have been an error. They changed it to a hit. Kyle Seager, it wasn't a routine play, but it's a play that he makes all the time. The ball goes bounding into left field and a couple of wild pitches. Paxton didn't seem to have it. And I thought, oh, man, it's too bad there. They're going to end up losing this game, and yet we saw how that scrappy nature of the Mariners came out again. They kept clawing and fighting back. They got the Haniger RBI single to get within two. They got the home run by Zunino, and then Span. I love that at-bat by Span. He looked so calm in the batter's box, and boy, he sure delivered.
No doubt. And, again, I think you just have to credit the acquisitions by Jerry DePoto, you know, getting guys like that are resilient, and then you know, the pitching acquisitions, you know, going last year with a couple trades to get starting pitching, it all seems to come together. And even though they've taken some hits, they made some mistakes and all that, they still are able to, you know, play the close games and win the close games. I mean, I think if somebody easily said this is a game, there's no way they win last year, and now they seem to win games like this often.
Well, they do, and now they're I think they're 22-10 in one-run games, and it was their 21st comeback win of the year, and they just continue to find different ways of doing it. I really, John, I mean, this is amazing, all the different – I know they've got really good players, but they've also got players that you've basically not even heard too much about who are contributing. A guy like Rob Whalen last night, who was just called up with – and Nick Rumbelow, people like Nick Rumbelow already, too, because of the night before, how he looked in the ninth inning. He looked so intense, and so it was fun to see that out of him. And then Rob Whalen, you don't win that game last night if he doesn't shut down the Red Sox and keep you within striking distance and going four innings, one-hit ball. It was a great performance by him, and it's a great story, too, coming back, taking a season off from depression issues, dealing with that, coming back, and so it was really nice to see from him last night.
Yeah, it really was. And that's where if you can win these type of games and just kind of stay even with the top teams, everything's going to be in your favor, because I still go and look at this schedule. And when you really think about it, other than the non-division games, okay, non-division games, not in this division. Now, Oakland now has a losing record, so they still have tough games because they have 26 games against division teams with winning records with the Angels and the Astros. But once they get through this stretch, they only have one series, and that's against the Yankees in an American League team that's not in this division with a winning record. And there's two of the teams in the NL West with winning records, and that's it. I mean, they've got 43 games right now coming up against winning teams and 49 against losing teams, and that gives you the edge that you can maintain something between 15 and 20 games above 500, even if things go wrong.
Well, yeah, it's just, it sets up so well for him now, especially. I mean, you've got some room to play with here with 20 games over 500, even if, I was thinking about the other day, John, they're 45-25, 11 games until the midway point of the season. They could go 5-6 in this stretch against, the Red Sox and the Yankees and then the Red Sox again. They could go 5-6 and still be on a 100-win pace at the midway point of the season, which is pretty amazing to be in that situation for the Mariners. And yeah, you look at it, too, and you were talking about the Angels and all the injuries they're having, and we saw the Angels this week. The Mariners look like a better team than the Angels, even when both teams are at full strength. And that's the only team. It's not some sort of horse race where you got a bunch of other teams that you're battling with. You're either going to win the division by beating the Astros, which still seems like a long shot, but you're right there right now, just a half game back, or you're going to end up getting the number one or number two playoff spot, and the only team you're really battling is the Angels, and you appear to be the superior team to the Angels right now. So things are really falling into place for the Mariners.
No, it really has. And again, it's like you talk about just a total surprise. And I think the positive thing is, I think it was a little bit of a wake-up call to a minor degree on Thursday night, losing that game 2-1 with Felix pitching well. But it, at the same time, the Astros continued to win on their easy schedule. And so it's like, okay, it's like they can compete against Boston. They probably can compete against the Yankees, but they're not going to be able to catch the Astros. Astros are going to win the division, because they've got too good of a team, too good of a pitching staff. But so as much as they can,
John, are you entirely convinced of that, though?
Yes. Yeah, because again, it's like I know how bad I am on following the schedule, and when you look at their schedule and you see that it was 422 their schedule between now and the All-Star break. And so they've played more tougher games, more games against winning teams than the Mariners, and they're still a half game ahead. They've won 9 in a row. And, of course, what was the coincidence of that? They started playing that easy schedule, and they were winning. Now, of course, in that mix, they had a split with the Mariners at 1-1. But after that, I know, like, for example, they only have a game against or a series against a winning team one time the rest of the month. And with that pitching staff and the ballpark, I mean, the ball team that they have, they're just going to win.
Well, John, I agree with you. And I think Houston at the end of the year is probably going to win the division by, let's say, 5 or 6 games over the Mariners. And the Mariners are probably going to end up winning 90 to 95 games. I thought they were going to go 81 and 81. I thought their starting pitching would be their downfall in the end, but the starting pitching has been really good. But don't you think that there's a little bit of mojo and woo-woo and magic and all those kind of things? I know the tangible part of it, when you look at the schedule, you do the head-to-head matchup, the Astros versus the Mariners, you think, okay, the Astros, they'd get most of the check marks. But I don't know. There's something about that intangible part of it, and we're almost halfway through the season, so it's not like this is an aberration or an anomaly or all those kinds of words. There's just something weird going on with the Mariners that might overcome those tangible things that we're talking about.
Yeah, but see, to overcome, you still have to beat the Astros, and that hasn't happened now in 4 years. Maybe even a little longer.
Well, they split with them in the last series.
They split with them in the last series, but they're still, up two and down four. And then you go back to last year. I mean, that's certainly, you can see that they're closing that gap. I mean, because they were 5-14 against them last year. But I mean, the edges to the Astros, because, I mean, you look at that team, I mean, visibly it's more talented. This team, maybe it can win more than 92 games, but I think the Astros are going to win 98-100.
No, at this point, John, the Astros are probably going to win 105, and the Mariners are probably going to win 95-100 the way they're going, mm-hmm. if they can keep it up. I was thinking about it, too. Like, we always sit there, and I'm guilty of this, too. I was thinking, oh, man, when the Mariners play this stretch of the Angels, Red Sox, Yankees, Red Sox, and then next week being on the road, I sit there and I go, well, that's when they're going to come back to earth. Well, how about flipping it around? If you're the Red Sox or the Yankees, and I know that their fans are probably thinking, Seattle Mariners, I don't know much about them. Boy, their record's really good, but they should have just as much concern about the Mariners right now, the Red Sox and Yankee fans, as Mariner fans do about the Red Sox and Yankees, because the Mariners really are every bit as good as those two teams are. And right now, they're better than the Angels. So, it's just a great situation to be in, because I think it looks like, anyway, after 17 years of not having playoff baseball, and we went into this season hoping to just get the wild card, thinking you were just going to give the Astros the title. But either way, it looks like come October, we're at least going to have one postseason game. And in spite of what happened with Paxton last night, I'll take my chances in that one game against the Yankees or the Red Sox and see what happens.
Yeah, that's why playing these games and being competitive against the Yankees and Red Sox really gives a barometer, because I think, you look on paper, but of course, I mean, I guess when you talk on paper, you throw that out when you're talking about the Mariners, because on paper, it's not supposed to add up like this. It's not supposed to add up to 20 games above 500. So they are defying what's on paper with the way that they play. But what you like is that, the games are pretty much going to be close, but they have enough confidence that they can pull it out. But I still give edges to Boston and the Yankees, because both of those teams, you as good as it is, I mean, Astros being number one, Red Sox being number two, and then maybe the Yankees number three. That's just their team is loaded, and they score runs. I mean, more than five runs a game.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I shake my head at these things, and I had so many doubts about, say, D. Gordon playing center field. Like, okay, well, he's athletic and he can run, but can you really convert a second baseman into a center fielder and expect him to do it at the major league level? And yet he did. And then when Cano went out, I thought, oh, well, they lose their number three hitter, a future Hall of Famer. They're not going to be able to overcome that. Well, they just moved Gordon into second base, and whatever their record is without Cano, it was a better winning percentage than when he was playing. You just go up and down the list. Ryan Healy, Danny and I have had doubts about him, because he had basically one really good month with Oakland last year. But if you look at the rest of his months and the strikeouts that he had, I wasn't a strong believer in Ryan Healy, and yet he's proven me wrong. He looks really good over there defensively, and he's had a hot bat. It's the starting pitching, Wade LeBlanc. Honestly, John, if he was this good, so his ERA, 2.45, the last eight starts, his eight starts since coming out of the bullpen. He's 31 years old. Why hasn't he stuck with another team at some point along? I mean, he's basically a journeyman who looks like a star right now. Marco Gonzalez, I didn't think he'd be this good this fast. I never knew if he would even be good after seeing him last year. So all these different things that are happening, I hope they continue. I don't know if they will, but they've certainly put themselves in position where it'd be surprising if they don't make the playoffs at this point.
Exactly. And of course, if you're wondering about the record without Cano, 23-7, 16 games above 500, and that's doing it even though they're scoring 4.23 runs per game. When Cano was there, it was 4.6. So they take a little bit of a hit on offense, yet they're 16 games above 500 without Cano.
Yeah, well, and John, you've seen it in sports, and I remember with the Sonics when I was covering them, when they had an injury and somebody went out, and you thought, I remember one time Derek McKee went out, and I thought, boy, he's such a important guy to that team. I'm sure they're going to feel it right away. Well, other players step up and they bond together, and I think that's been the case with the Mariners. I don't know if they're going to continue to be this good without Robinson Cano. You would think it would hurt them at some point. But they've rallied together, and it hasn't just been short term. I mean, you just said 23-7. I mean, that's a month without Robinson Cano, and they're doing just fine without him. I don't know what they're going to do. And you know, DePoto says that when he comes back, they're going to have some sort of timeshare there with D. Gordon at second base, and then putting him out in center field too, knowing that Cano can't play in the playoffs. But it's I thought that I'd be in a hurry for Robbie to come back, and now I'm at a point where I'm going, well, okay, I guess it'll be cool when Robbie comes back, but they don't really need him.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So what's on the golf show today, which follows this show at 12?
Well, thanks for asking, John. I really appreciate it. The golf show today, it's U.S. Open coverage. I think you'll get a kick out of this. We're talking to Sam Farmer of the L.A. Times, who you know is an NFL writer for the L.A. Times, but he's also at Shinnecock covering the U.S. Open this week. He's doing some golf coverage for the L.A. Times, so we'll be talking to him, getting his impressions of the course and the leader, Dustin Johnson, whether he can hang on or not. And then we're also going to talk to Matt Allen, the general manager at Chambers Bay. It was 3 years ago that Chambers Bay hosted the U.S. Open, and we'll get his thoughts on how that event went 3 years ago and the chances for Chambers Bay to host another U.S. Open in the future.
Oh, that sounds great. So we'll be listening at 12. It's the golf show, and have a good drive across and enjoy today.
Okay, Professor. Thanks for having me.
All right, Jim Moore joining us. Of course, we are taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up the phone lines. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ron in Woodinville. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good, how are you?
Hey, good, thank you. See, I've got a kind of out-of-the-box suggestion for those that are kneeling at the national anthem. How about if we penalize the kneelers, each one of them, 15-yard penalty, but give that option to the other team to use at their discretion throughout the game?
Yeah, see, that was the one that I thought would have been worse than the one that they came up with, because I do not like the rule of having, you know, everybody, you know, those who want to protest, you know, in the locker room, and then they come out and you have the embarrassment of coming out like that. I did not like that. But now when you start to attach game type of things to it, I think that's bad. And, you know, certainly it just causes more problems. I mean, the simple solution is basically go back to where it was in 2008, 2009, and beyond that. You know, just go back and don't have the players involved. You take away the controversy. I mean, you know, it's like all the players stay in the locker room, and you can say, well, geez, that's kind of conceding. And it's like, no, it's not conceding. That's the way it was.
Okay, I'll give you that one. That's a fair shake.
Yeah, because what it does, it eliminates this controversy. Because, you know, whether you have a 15-yard penalty, whether you now have the ability to fine a team if a guy's out there and does some kind of a gesture, or then they can come back and fine the player, it doesn't make it go away. And, you know, it creates a environment where you still have fans that get so upset about that, and I can't forbid them for that. I can't criticize them for that, because again, whether it's a disrespect that's out there, just respect everything. Say, listen, we did this because it's no, I mean, if you look in the NBA, it's collectively bargained that they have to be out there and they have to honor the flag, And if they don't, they can get suspended. But they've collected. And so if you look in college football, they're in the locker room. Why not just go back in the locker room?
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you very much for taking my call. Appreciate
okay, Ron. Hey, thank you. Good call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Nick in Covington. Hey, Nick.
John, it's always a great morning when the Mariners win the night before. Am I right?
It was pretty good this morning. I know that.
Yeah, it was really good. Well, anyways, I want to get down to the nitty-gritty about the Mariners. So yeah. The trade deadline will be coming up next month, and I read an article on ESPN talking about Jake DeGrom. Now, I saw that he's not a very logical spot for the Mariners, but I think that it's obvious if they were to make a move via trade deadline, it would have to be in the pitching area. I'm thinking maybe a starting pitcher, maybe somebody they can throw on the bullpen, but knowing the history of, like, health concerns, like James Paxton hasn't necessarily pitched a whole season, and I was wondering, who do you think would be a good target come trade deadline?
Well, tell me what the appeal of him is, and what did ESPN say about? Because you would have to think what it's going to be is something similar to what he's done now, which is, you know, you try to reach for a pitcher that still you can have control of, and it's not going to be financially that expensive. Because, you know, they make the move for Marco Gonzalez. They made the move for Ramirez. You know, they, make the move. Well, they did make an expensive move in Mike Leake. So, you know, they could go that way. And they are going to have some extra money because, you know, they spent $10 million on Colome and Denard. But they also got like $4.5 million paid off by Tampa Bay. So they still have a little bit of money. But I have to think it isn't going to be the $11, $12, $13 million guy, but it's going to be some 26, 27-year-old pitcher that has started, has a good upside, maybe a good prospect. Because remember, the one thing that they don't have is a lot of prospects to offer in return.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I don't think that DeGrom would be a good fit here, so I agree with the article. But when I was watching the game, I was hearing Ryan Roland Smith talking about potentially getting Cole Hamels. Now, I'm not sure we need another lefty, but he has had over 100 innings pitched in the postseason, so he has that experience. But I'm not sure if we need another lefty in the lineup or in the bullpen. What do you think?
I think getting another lefty would be nice. They've made a lot of moves in the bullpen, and I think that they are a little bit short in that area. I mean, they are covered, but getting a lefty for the bullpen, I don't think would be a bad idea.
Yeah, and he's up in age, too. He's not necessarily a younger guy, so he wouldn't be on the higher end of price, too. So that I think that'd be also pretty good option.
But I think you can see from this team, it's like, okay, you know, I'm sure that there's a budget there that they don't want to exceed, but they've got to be so elated ownership about what's going on. They've got to be all in. And so I think that Jerry will have the license to do pretty much whatever he wishes. But again, I think that the way he likes it, because I think what he likes and what I like about what he's done is that he's targeted younger guys, and now these guys are starting to emerge as leaders. And I think that's why you see such good, a good vibe coming from this team. You know, whether it's Marco Gonzalez, whether it's Ben Gamel, whether it's Segura. I mean, these guys are young and they're still in their prime and getting better. And I think that they like that model. And so if they can get somebody on the rise as opposed to somebody on the downside, I think that's going to be the key. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John. How's
good morning.
It going? I just want to say this about the Mariners. I feel now that the ghost of Mariners past is gone. Because look what happened yesterday, overcoming errors, getting those clutch base hits, and getting that save.
I can't disagree. I mean, because when things look bleak, they come back and do something positive, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, in years past, you wouldn't have seen that. But this is something that we've been waiting for many years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know, and I think what kind of tipped it off a little bit is that what happened to the Buffalo Bills, because the Bills had the longest streak, and here they were, you know, they were just concluding a game, they were pretty average, I mean, just kind of a team, and all of a sudden, a couple breaks happened, and they were able to slip in and make the playoffs when nobody expected it, and so consequently, that breaks the streak and now puts it over to the Mariners now as the longest playoff drought, but now you can see they're winning improbable games and doing improbable things.
Oh, yeah. And I just want to talk about the fans, too, itself, because there's still some that are still skeptical about them. It's time that we stop that right now.
Well, and I think, and again, that's why I may be overdoing it with the schedule, but I think that you have to realize it because, okay, what happens? I mean, the Bills made the playoffs. Was it a good AFC? No. I mean, you didn't have a lot of real good teams. I mean, the three best teams were, New England, Pittsburgh, and Jacksonville. That was it. I mean, everybody else was suspect as far as how good they were. I mean, maybe you put Kansas City in there, and now somebody who's probably not a playoff team, like Tennessee, was able to sneak into the playoffs. And so you look, there's only six teams in the American League with winning records, and you know Cleveland's now starting to play well and get that figured out. You know that the top three teams, at least non-Mariners, are the Astros, the Yankees, and the Red Sox. The Angels have 15 players on the disabled list, and so something is going positive there, and so that sets things up. And you know, once they get this 10-game stretch of games against the Yankees and Red Sox, I mean, because remember, they finished against Cleveland. They're done against Cleveland. They have their games against the Angels and the Astros, but they only have one more series, and that's going to be in September against the Yankees, against an American League team with a winning record.
Yep.
These are all winnable games now, and all they have to do is continue what they've done so far, battle these one-run games against the Red Sox and the Yankees, and if they can get through this 500, if they win 5 and lose 5, they're in great shape.
All right. Thanks a lot, John.
Hey, Patrick, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. Fantastic and always, always, forever. I hope Mrs. Clayton and you are doing wonderful, too.
I'm trying to do our best.
Hey, one day at a time, Mr. Clayton.
That's correct.
And make it a great day. So that means you're going running today, right?
Hoping to. Something will probably pop up that'll kill the chance to do it, but I'm going to try.
Oh, Mr. Clayton, you cannot settle for mediocrity. You must make that personal commitment.
Well, we can try, but always things
all
pop
right,
up.
All right, all right. Let's talk about here. 8 weeks, Mr. Clayton, to college football.
Mm-hmm. Just around the corner.
Now, there's been some talk about can the Irish win all their home games. And it's a daunting schedule, Mr. Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
They start off with Michigan, everybody's darling this year to make it into the playoffs. Well, if they do, it's because they're going to have been beaten by Notre Dame, and that's going to happen. Almost slipped there, Mr. Clayton.
I don't know. I think Michigan's pretty good.
I know they are. So that brings me to the point of Notre Dame plays the best schedule in college football year in and year out. They play the tough schedule, Mr. Clayton.
No, let's put it this way. Do they play in the SEC?
No, of course
okay,
not.
Okay, so they don't play the – I mean, it's like their schedule may be filled with some good teams, but until you get into a conference and that situation, it's still – you're on the outside looking in.
Well, Mr. Clayton, let me ask you a quick thing here. Bleacher Report, this is the preseason team rankings. Wait, as it says in most of the articles, way too early, but these are the current going into 8 weeks from now. Realistically, it looks what the rankings will be. While Bleacher has Notre Dame 10, Washington 11, Stanford 12, Virginia Tech 13, USC 16, and Florida State 17. Now, Notre Dame does not play the Huskies, but I'd say those other teams are pretty good, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they're pretty good.
I don't see a whole lot of SEC teams in the rankings, Mr. Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
In Yahoo, They've got Notre Dame ranked number 1, Washington 11, USC 12, Stanford 14, Virginia Tech 15, Michigan 17, and Florida State 19.
Okay.
Once again, where's the SEC team coming in? Alabama?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. They've got Alabama, and that's pretty much what you need, but that conference is still very, very difficult.
Oh, Mr. Clayton, they're looking at the Big Ten being better this year than them, than the ACC, or the SEC. I don't know, Mr. Clayton. They're a paper tiger league now. To use a common vernacular, they ain't what they used to be.
Well, all I know is that they get one or two teams in the playoffs every year.
Well, when you're playing five top 10 to top 25 ranked teams, I think you're a pretty respectable program, and you don't need to be in a conference.
What do you have? Are there seven or eight or nine teams not in a conference? That's it.
They can't play the independent schedule like the Irish can.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us around the why. And it's simple, Mr. Clayton. It's called money.
Right.
And the Irish get paid. Mm-hmm. Why in the world? They've got their own personal TV network, NBC, which in a few years from now, they're going to get rid of NBC and run their own network. They do get paid by a conference, Mr. Clayton.
Uh-huh.
They get paid by the ACC. They get paid by the – too many alphabets there. They get paid by the ACC, Mr. Clayton, this year. They're being in the conference, not football, but all the other programs. They got paid there $7 million. So their net for the year – last year it was over $20 million.
Mm-hmm. But is it about the money or the winning? And I haven't seen that. They had a good season last year.
You've got 10-2 or 11-1 predicted season. They may do better.
They may do worse.
Run the table at home, and that's against Michigan. That's against Florida State. That's against Stanford.
How bad is it going to be if they lose that Michigan game?
It's a big game, Mr. Clay.
It is a big game. I agree.
You know, historically, that in the past, that Michigan-Notre Dame game has always been a barometer for winning team success for the rest of the season as a national championship type of deal. So, yeah. We're playing big league ball, Mr. Clayton, and that's why the Irish are so great.
Well,
they
we'll
play
see.
Big league ball, and they'll hide in the conference.
We will see. I've got to run.
Mr. Clayton, say so. Go ahead.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Russ in Linwood. Hey, Russ.
Hey, JC. How are you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Good. I need my bear fix.
Okay. Well, I mean, they've concluded their off-season program, the mini camp and all that stuff. They think there's progress at the quarterback position. They talk a good game about their wide receivers, but I still don't see it yet because, again, Allen Robinson's just coming back from the ACL. Kevin White's still hurt. I know that real good reviews on Ron Smith, the first-round pick, and so it looks like they're better at linebacker, and they're making the turn on defense, but still it's a matter they got to get Kyle Long healthy. He's still kind of banged up.
He's always banged up, isn't he, John?
He is, yeah. That's got to be concerning.
Oh, my goodness, we should see. Any other earth-shattering news?
No, because, I mean, they are so quiet as far as, a lot of the business that they've done.
Yeah.
But I think there's a good feel. I think that, they've got a coach that Matt Nagy that's getting very good reviews. He's putting a lot of college-type stuff in the offense and creative type of stuff, much like that they ran when he was at Kansas City. Mm. So they get good reviews there. And then, of course, I think the key was it kept continuity on the defense by keeping Vic Fangio.
Right. Oh, that's good. Well, thank you for your information.
Okay, very good. Russ, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Matt in Linwood. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how you doing today, John?
Good, how are you?
Good. Hey, I wanted to know if you've heard anything about George Fant. I remember hearing a lot of hype about him before he got injured last year. Do you think he's going to come back strong? And if he does live up to that hype, do you think we have a chance to be a strong offensive line?
Yeah, I think they're going to be better on the offensive line. Now, he's still not at the stage where he can practice, but he's on pace to be able to do things at the start of training camp. So that's positive. You know, I can see that he's in, you know, good shape. That's good. I know his spirits are good because he's on the field. It's just that he's not doing much as far as practice. But no, I think that, you know, they feel good about what he's going to be able to do. Now, the question is, can he make some conversions over to the right tackle position? Because now whatever he was doing on the left side is going to be completely different now doing it on the other side, and he's going to need practice. And unfortunately, he's not had the practice time to be able to do that. I mean, Jermaine Ifedi is going to be the starter. But if there's a chance that he can pick things up well enough, you know, then maybe he can be the swing guy, play both tackle positions. I know that Jamarco Jones, they like him, the draft choice out of Ohio State. So, you know, those could be the four tackles. But, I mean, Fant has just not had a chance yet to make his run.
Am I right when I say that he did have a lot of hype before he got injured? Weren't the Hawks expecting a lot out of him?
Well, yeah, well, they were, because, I mean, they played him half the season at left tackle as a rookie, and half the season, and he did some good things. And so then, you know, they figured it was going to be an advancement, and he did do some good things. But, you know, it's still, I think, and again, to judge the offensive line now with the new scheme is going to be so much more difficult, because, again, I think this is going to be a better scheme. Athletically, he's there, because you're talking about, you know, a player that didn't even play offensive line. He was a defensive lineman and tight end, so he is a good athlete. But now what it comes down to, and he did, I mean, some amazing things for somebody that never played the position before. I mean, think, you're in the National Football League, and you're out there, never played offensive line, and you're playing left tackle? That's remarkable.
Yeah, unbelievable. Thanks, John. Go Dogs.
Okay, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Brett in Sumner. Hey, Brett.
Hey, good morning, John Clayton. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey, you know, it's another fine day up here in the Northwest. John, I got two quick questions for you. Question number one, buy or sell on Earl Thomas with all this sold-out stuff?
Right now you have no choice. I mean, I think that if you had an opportunity to sell, you'd consider selling. But right now there doesn't seem to be anything close to a trade, because too many teams have their free safety situation all tied up. And, you know, if Houston's not going to jump in, which they're not, and it doesn't look like Dallas is going to jump in because they've got so much money tied up in, you know, offensive line and not in the secondary, then, you know, you just have to try to wait it out. And, you know, if you get them back, but what it does, it gives you the time to see what you have in Delano Hill and Tedrick Thompson. And then if indeed they do a good thing, and, you know, Earl Thomas still is holding out at the end of training camp, then maybe you revisit the idea of trading him. But, you know, you have no choice to wait it out. You can't pay him now, because, you know, you need to see where he is and his feeling on the team. And if he's not going to be here, you're not going to get that. So, I mean, the only way you give him a deal is to be with him for a month or 2 months, see where he is, and then talk about doing something long term.
Absolutely makes sense. Thank you for that one. And real quick, what are the Hawks' options or possibilities of even making it in the top three in the division this season? And thank you for taking my call.
Well, I think, I mean, right now you would lean to say that Rams are the best team in the division. They're going to be much, much better on defense, and they're very good on offense. And so that's going to be hard to catch. San Francisco, I still don't buy the idea that they're a playoff team. So that puts Seattle in the number two hole fighting for a wild card. And so I think that, they're not going to, I mean, Arizona's probably a 6-win team at this stage. San Francisco's probably a 7-win team. Seattle can be a 9-win team, and with a break or two can win 10. Thank you for the phone call. Coming up next, we're going to get together with Doug Farrar from Bleacher Report, talking about the National Football League. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.